You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Now, I'm afraid we've got good news and bad news for today's episode. The good news is that we managed to save this live special show from being unlistenable, frankly. The bad news is that in terms of sound quality, it's still not great. Really sorry about that. We had a great time talking to a very talented comedian, but due to some unforeseen issues with background noise and some other technical problems, this was very nearly a washout, and I'm afraid it's all completely my fault. I'm very grateful to my sometime assistant producer, Sarah Grun, for her help with this, but if you're new to the Comedians Comedian podcast, please be aware that the sound quality that follows is not representative of our usual standards. We didn't want to throw it out completely, and if you persevere with it, you will hear why. There's some excellent stuff here from the very funny Mr. Benny Boot. Thank you so much for coming along. I was going to interview you at Baby Blue the last time we gigged together. Do you remember, in Liverpool?
We both had a big night,
and I texted you about 2:30 p.m. the next day and said, look, let's just do it another time. So, I remember that was the last time I saw you prior to the gig that you did for us tonight, and you absolutely smashed it to pieces in a commercial comedy club on a weekend night, on like a Friday or a Saturday night.
Yeah, I like Baby Blue. You normally don't go good there because it's a bit rowdy, but it gets mixed reviews. Some acts say they hate it.
Yeah.
But I generally usually have a decent one there. Quite like it. I get excited when I go there.
It's got the architecture of the room. It's like a basement room with sort of brick arches everywhere. And I always think brick or wood panelling makes the sound reverb, and so it tends to...
So yeah, and it really only like one or two people laugh, and then it just gets multiplied off them. I actually don't do that good. It's just like two people and then laugh.
It's also full of Liverpudlian people who are... Do you find them a hard audience? They sort of got a reputation for being difficult, I think.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I've had gigs that haven't gone well, but never anyone that's... I've had to go, oh, you fucking... Oh, you're a dick.
Yeah.
Anything right. Like that. I can kind of deal with that. I guess because once you get relaxed in the club, you're not really intimidated by it, so you just feel like you can handle it. So I think the first time that I got a 10 there, I did really good. And then, but everyone said, oh, you want to do Baby Blue, it's bad. And, but then I did really, really good. I thought, oh, that was a fucking fluke. And they were like, oh, man, we'll get you back for the weekend. I go, no thanks. And I turned it down for like 2-3 years, didn't go back because I was scared of it. I was like, definitely a one-off. I did the same thing to Highlights as well. So I did a good one, and I'd get you back in next week. I was like, oh, no.
I've done it now, let's take it off, let me go back, yeah. The nature of the stuff that you do is, like, do you find it's reliable in commercial comedy clubs? Because I think with your material, it's joke-based, if they're not one-liners, they're sort of two or three-liners. You're not pushing a sort of chat kind of agenda. You know, some comics can kind of go, here's a bit of material about something I think, and then they can sort of, you know, fudge around it with conversation, whereas you're more joke-oriented.
Yeah.
Does that carry with it an inherent risk when you're at a commercial comedy club where you might have stags, hens, interrupters, stuff like that?
So I'm trying to do this in two questions. Oh, okay. For me, I'm not very good with the attention span stuff. I've zoned out after how you're doing.
Yeah.
I get that a lot.
Cocktails! Oh, I find I have to, sometimes maybe I'll just give you some information, you can piece the answer together yourself. So like, I have to make it clear, if I'm doing jokes or conversation. So like, if I go on and, for example, too chatty with the audience, like I've got like a 30 second leeway that I can maybe chat with them a bit. But if I chat too much, then their brains, the way I see it, it's like a little switch. They go from chat attention span to jokes. So I have to be careful. If I do too much chat, then the little meter in their heads go, oh, this guy's a fucking chatter. And then if I try to do jokes, it doesn't. They're already in chat mode. I've already switched them on and let them loose. So I have to make sure I get a joke or make sure it's very structured. And like, you know, this is what I'm doing. That's why I always say, it's been good, I'm doing jokes. Yeah. But if I do jokes, then they're in jokes mode. But if I do chat and then try to get a joke, sometimes it doesn't work and then I'll just fail.
So I've certainly experienced that myself, that when you're being conversational with an audience, there's sometimes a gear change. Sometimes if you're being conversational and you know, I don't like using the word banter, but that's often what it's called, if you're bantering with an audience, and then they get in that mode of going, oh, it's a chatty kind of thing. And if the banter really works and it really flies, then I find with my jokes, they come off second best, because best jokes are really as good as improvising something funny immediately in the moment that they can tell.
Yeah, like if someone talks to me when I come on, then I'm aware, like, oh, I have to deal with this chat quickly. I do have a little fail-safe to get out of it, but I'm chatting, I kind of like realise, I'm in chat mode here too long, and it starts going in the red, and I'm like, fuck, now I've fucked it. But I have to say, like, if I've got to do too much chat, there's a technique that I've had with jokes, where I try to write safety jokes or safety lines that allows me to get out of things. And one of them is, if I'm doing banter and it doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't matter, like, it might not be funny. So I'll find, like, if hopefully it won't go anywhere, because then I can reference, I'll do a joke where I just reference, oh, that was rubbish banter, a really, really bad banter, kind of improvise here, it's just going nowhere. And then I sort of pull this all, like, obviously, prepared, and I say, I need that little paper clip to pop up and go, it looks like I'm trying to do improvisation. You need some help? And then everyone laughs, and then that's a joke. So then I go, I'm back in.
So you're back in your jokes.
I get one guy, like, pulling it up from the nosedive. Just plows into banter land. It's like a 6-minute conversation, which I don't like. Ugh.
Okay.
Back to joke world.
Do you not? Do you feel happier in joke world then?
Yeah.
Because you're. Yeah. So because you can improvise, you're a very good improviser, and maybe the fact that you've got that joke to get to, you've got like the fansack joke or the paperclip joke. You like, because you know, like you said, it's almost good if the banter fails, because then you can do that joke. So do you find that having that fansack, knowing like, hey, this would be great if it works, because that'd be funny, and if it doesn't work, I can learn to that joke.
Yeah.
Because that's going to put you in a relaxed state of mind that's better for the banter.
I know that in the back of my mind I've got one chance, I've got a lifeline, but I still won't try and look for banter.
Okay.
And sometimes, but then I find I'm a good sprinter, I'm not a long distance person, like, but even like in 20 minutes, like, especially if I usually go hard real quickly, like I'm boom booming out and then I'll ease back once I'm at a, you know, nice gallop. But even then I find that in the middle people's attention span start to, oh man, so many fucking jokes, finally, joke.
Okay.
So then sometimes within the open the conversation, like I'll have the senses out and something I can pick up on and play with. And generally it goes quite well. I don't like doing jokes. And then if it happens, then I don't mind it, it's quite funny.
Sure. So in that, just sticking with that environment of a commercial weekend comedy club for the moment, do you find that your jokes, like, do you tailor the speed of the speed with which you get to the punchline? Are you interested in things like word economy? Are you into, like, taking words out so that you can get to the funny faster? Because there's something quite enjoyably languid about the way you speak your material. You're very relaxed on stage. You look like you've got a lot of time.
I used to be all about, like, sure, as is every comedian, like, take out the fat, you know what I mean? Don't want to, like, more so when I was like, trying to, like, almost like meticulously, where you're just going over, like, probably take that word out.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's pretty, it was really pretty anal, but then I kind of, but as it, as I got along now, quite liked it. I think, Offstage said where he, every time he does a joke, he tries to do it a little bit different. Just a tiny spot, almost like he says an analogy, he's like he's on a pool, and the side of the pool is his joke, and he'll just push it away from the joke a little bit, and then he can just swim back to it. Okay, so he just tries to mess with the wording a little bit, or try to word it differently, not too much, because otherwise you might lose the joke. But like, I guess, so I'm not so much anymore, like, obviously the jokes, I try to keep it quite concise, and I'm aware if I'm putting too much information in, but then, if I'm feeling comfortable, the way I keep it fresh for myself is I always try to, no matter what gig I'm doing, I always try to do a new joke. That's just me.
Okay.
And again, I've got a fail safe, which I didn't do today, but I've got fail safes for those as well.
Okay.
So I was
talking to James about this in the interval. You do have fail safes, you do have those kind of get out things. Like, I mean, the one I remember, and the one that we were talking about with James, was the having a list of jokes in your pocket and saying, these are my. Well, I'll do my recovery jokes.
But yeah, I also did a recovery joke. I did do one. This is a new one, I can't believe. It's like, remember the fucking follow routine joke? And it's like, what the fuck? Why are you talking about it? It's just a little technique, because then I get the laugh, and then while I'm doing that, I quickly look at my list. I actually did look at my list. Fucking friends, what do you do?
Yeah.
But yeah, the other one's the other list one. And there's another one I had, which was like, if I was dying on stage, I used a similarity between the, I used to say, you know, I ever saw the Liverpool v AC Milan final, where AC Milan were up 4-0 or something, and all the Liverpool fans left, because they thought they're not going to win, and the last minute Liverpool came back and like won 5-4.
Yeah.
And I said, well, yeah, that's going to be like this, like 18 minutes, and I'm just, this is just shit, and you guys are going to leave in the last 10 minutes. But yeah, little fail safes.
Is that because your material is inherently risky? Because you're sort of on an individual joke basis, like, do you find that an audience will go for joke one, joke two, joke three, joke four, and then five, it will be too daft or a bridge too far or something?
Yeah, maybe it's.
I think it sounds like I'm going, are you unreliable? I don't mean that, but
no, that's what I'm thinking about your question, and I'm like scanning everything I've ever done, going, is that why I do it? Because I don't know how or why I come up with jokes, but then one guy came up and goes, I know how you come up with jokes, and I was like, whatever, loser.
Yeah.
And then he told me, and it was like he found my power, but I didn't know it. Working backwards, like I take a, like in some cases an observation, you know what I mean? But then I just try to add, how do I get to that observation, but with a bit of a twist and thing. So it's just great, and I think most comics do it, but I didn't realise.
Sure. Can you give us an example of that with an existing piece of material?
That we've heard?
Yeah, that we've heard, or a different one, because a lot of people won't have heard the
beginning. How did the pizza cutter one come about? I think I just was like, well, yeah, so I was just like, pizza cutter, it's just like slicing bread with a wheel. I was like, wheel's down.
So is that you started from there rather than from the sentence, the best thing when slice, the best thing?
Yeah, that's how I was to make it. It didn't, never worked. And then,
so you looked at a pizza cutter and thought, what? You thought there's something flying about that?
I saw a pizza cutter and I broke it down. I was like, it's fucking stupid thing, isn't it? It's a wheel that slices bread. And I was thinking, like, reinvented the wheel, you know, I kept trying to find ways to get to it, and then it's sliced bread, but it's a wheel's a good invention. Sliced bread was like the greatest, basically sliced bread, and I combined the two, and then I just all that fucking preamble just to get to the punchline. I said to her, I just want to go, a wheel, and it's a pizza cutter, it's slicing bread, boom, done, next one.
Those two things are both about the concept of inventions.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but it never worked, and I had to like do a lot of like, so I had to make sure I talked to people so they made the links.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the creation, sticking with that joke for a minute, in the creation of that joke, how many different versions of that have you said on stage before you settled on the one that now works?
I think it was like about three. I mean, the first one goes up to Twitter, and it got good luck, a number of retweets, and it was just like, I can't remember, obviously Twitter's only 140 characters, so that was really concise.
Sure.
So then I just tried to say it as I did on Twitter, and people just went, what? And then I tried again, like maybe just a bit more of a preamble, and then that the end product you came, I remember it just came out, because the joke version of that beforehand wasn't anything like that, and I just pretty much bashed that first go,
okay.
And then just stuck, So basically, you saw heaps and heaps of new jokes. My technique is rather the shotgun approach and just shoot, hopefully, something straight. It's not as though I'm aware, like, this one's going to be funny. That one's going to be funny. Like, I have no idea.
You can't have no idea at all.
I still don't. I saw, very rarely I go, this one's going to be funny.
Okay.
But usually I just try and write as much as I can and just go, what about that one? You like that one? I can take that straight on my back.
Okay.
And shoot him in the face and see who survives. Is that a saying? I just came up with a saying.
So this is Benny. Again, I'm so sorry for the sound quality, and my apologies to Benny himself. He'd done a great gig for us that night, and I'm really pleased with how the interview went. We'll go into some detail on his persona, his rather musical delivery, the way he approaches writing for an hour-long show. Lots and lots of excellent stuff, lots of really technical stuff, but you will need to just grin and bear the audio. I'm so sorry, but there we go. Onward and upward. So here we go with some live dates for The Comedian's Comedian live at the Edinburgh Fringe. Remember, the show is daily all throughout Edinburgh at 5:15 p.m. Do come along. We've got some superb guests. I'm going to tell you two of them now. The first is Edinburgh Comedy Award winner, living legend, and my fellow dark room escapee, more on that later, Brendan Burns. I'm really pleased to have Brendan on the show. He's coming along on the 3rd of August. Now, remember, these aren't publicly available yet, so if you want to get in quickly, if you're a fan of Brendan Burns, and I think he's going to be really good fun to talk to, very, very interesting. Lots of piercing questions to ask Brendan. Brendan's made some fascinating decisions in his career, but he's a very, very funny man, and I'm really looking forward to talking to him. He is on the 3rd of August. And on the 5th of August, we have a guest, a man I first saw at Edinburgh years and years ago, having seen him many times improvising on Whose Line Is It Anyway? And he then went on, of course, to appear in The Phantom Menace. He's one of the voice talents there, and he's still a very successful comedian with his own excellent podcast. It is, of course, Greg Proops. Again, very, very excited. Basically, everyone we've got for the Edinburgh live shows, I'm just thrilled to bits to have. I think they're all capable of selling out. So if you're desperate to see them, do get in quickly. Greg Proops is on the 5th of August. Some of this stuff is already on the Facebook group, and I'm going to be releasing it publicly on my homepage and on the website later this week. So get in quickly to secure your seat. You can follow the link at comedianscomedian.com for tickets, or you can go to the Gilded Balloon's own website and just search for Goldsmith. Just put Goldsmith. It was easier than putting podcast or comedian in the little search box. We've had some great entries on Twitter in the game called Very Alderton, where we're coming up with tribute comics. That's the hashtag, tribute comics. My favourite this week has been Beta K by Bloody Helm on Twitter. We've had loads of really good ones, so you can still enter. A couple of weeks left, we're going to still run that. I do have more to read out, but as you can probably hear from my voice, I'm knackered. It's 2:05 a.m. and I've been dicking around with the edit all night trying to clean up the audio. So we'll do more Very Alderton tribute comics next time. Now, let's get back to the wonderful Benny Boot.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Your persona on stage is
it's very unusual. It's very unique to you. You have this kind of blend of being just sort of daffy. Do you know what I mean? Just being like you. Sometimes it feels like you're from another world. Do you know what I mean? You like a sort of. I think. Hey, man.
Not funny.
Is that reasonable? I think for the benefit of the listener, for some reason we are sitting in the round, and I'm just looking. We may have to pause at some moment. I was just thinking we could pause so that the people currently sitting behind Benny could move so they can see his face because he's the guest.
Or
we
can just.
But then we can swap. We can switch.
Get six in a room on us too.
If you all moved, then it would be like me and my gang all festival. But I'm just looking around just for, I mean, would you agree that Benny's persona, it's like you're a kind of a cartoon character. It's like you're...
I've had cartoon character books. Apparently, even though I used to consider myself as like a really deadpan, which is like when I started for things, but I think like, an advert. Who the fuck are they taking me? They offered me an advert based on my comedy, and this is why I thought of this. So then I thought, why am I getting an advert? Because based on what they saw, it's just jokes. It's no like, you know, it's not like, I know, like, it's not like Jack White, it's physical, it's all over the place.
And sure.
Like, how are they putting me on the television? It doesn't make sense. But then I think my ex-girlfriend at the time, she was like, it's because you've got a really animated face. And then I spoke to, with a web through James Wynetski, a promoter, and I was like, why are they giving me this? And he goes, because they said you've got a really animated face. And I was like, and then essentially I was like, yeah, you've got a little cartoony all over the place. But yeah.
But you thought you were dead, but
I thought I was like this. Oh yeah, so it's a real slice of bread.
Even that is oddly cartoonish. Even you doing an impression of you being dead, but So is that something you just the way that you're on stage, do you feel it's like an accurate representation of you? Is it you just being yourself?
No, definitely not. It's like, you know, what was it stand-up said that the best comics are the ones who are truthful on stage. I'm definitely not truthful.
You don't think?
No. Well, just going back to like how do you like keeping it fresh and interesting and whatever. It's just I will try to, if I'm feeling very comfortable, rather than fuck with the wording, like, I'll never do with that. Well, if I might add bits on the end, which I think I did a few, like, they're not funny, but it's just, like, getting drunk for me. Mm. Otherwise, I will tend, almost like a DJ, like, mess with the sound, so I elongate my vowels quite a lot.
Yes, okay, yeah.
So I'll just, like, oh, maybe I'll shorten this one. It might be kind of really clipped. So that's also why I swear. I don't swear for shock value. Like I think fine. Like I don't ever do jokes on. I do have jokes, but I don't like start talking about pot and sex and anything like that. Cause I'm a bit prudish and I don't like talk about it. Very uncomfortable.
Okay.
So and the only reason I swear on stage is for rhythm. It's my hi hat.
Okay.
It's almost like, you know, I'm going to compare myself to Shakespeare. To keep that fucking bounce and cadence going. So that's why.
An example occurs to me of a joke you didn't do tonight, one of my favourite ones of yours about the back of the lorry when the sign says, if you can't see my mirrors, I can't see you. And to which the punchline is, whenever I see that, that's when I'll go to the back of the lorry and start unloading and stealing their shit. And there is something, you do have that kind of, that scansion, that odd elastic sort of scansion.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of delivery. You must ask me, delivery or content? I know delivery, is that a question?
And it's all the time.
Where is it? You haven't got it? Delivery or content, and I think I would put delivery over content.
Okay.
I love delivery, you know what I mean? Like, content's good, but if you're boring on stage, it's just like,
sure.
On paper, I don't know, like, Emo Phillips jokes, you know Emo Phillips?
Yeah.
Like, he has some amazing jokes, but I can't get into his delivery.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think I used to read a lot of his stuff before I heard it. I was like, this guy looks amazing. And
yeah.
Like, oh no, why?
Yeah,
Emo Phillips. Yeah. So yeah, delivery, I like it. Something to keep, you know.
Yeah,
it's like a child. Nursery rhymes.
Are you musical? Can you play an instrument? You mentioned DJ. Do you do anything?
No, musical? I play the guitar. You might have seen me do guitar on stage.
I don't know.
Oh, man. I sometimes play guitar. Just like the technique that Dimitri learned.
Yeah, sure.
Play guitar while you take jokes. Actually, when James did his bit, when he played that little, he had that little musical bit at the moment. You find, like, since he did it, like, even I was like, right, half. The one set this down, I was like, you're now listening. And as soon as you did that, I was like, focus. It just brings everyone's focus in.
Yeah.
So I find guitar's just really nice. Like, I had, like, at my show last year, there was this kind of bits where the jokes, they wouldn't really work on their own as a joke and just in my set. But if you put it behind music, it's like, give you a bit more leeway. It's a bit of a cheat. You can see shitloads of acts now just coming up with their guitars.
When Dimitri Martin had his very successful Edinburgh runs,
yeah.
A lot of people start.
I don't do it often, but every now and then I did it in my show last year, and I'm going to do it this year, but I've made it a bit more bespoke, and there's going to be like a, it's not just fun, but yeah. But like, another example, we had a gig at Spain, which is a very rowdy and crazy like audience, it was late night. These guys were monsters. I actually brought Paul Sweeney on with me because I wasn't able to play that well.
Yes.
And he played, and it was just like, oh, this is going to be horrible. As soon as that music started, it's just like that three-headed dog in Harry Potter. He was going to sleep. I was like, all right, jokes.
Yeah. When you're on stage, you seem very shambolic in the way that you work. You've got a bit of paper in your hand, you loll a bit, you have that sort of that elastic way of speaking. Is that a deliberate attempt to not be slick? Because you could never, an accusation that could be never levelled at you is that you're slick. I say that as someone who, like, I become slick in every single review, so to me slick is kind of an insult, basically. To me it suggests something that has no content and is just kind of like, you know, just a bit too slick. Whereas I wonder, like, maybe it's the same thing as you're talking about, you know, the way you speak and putting pauses in and sort of elongating vowel sounds and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, for lack of a word, slick in the fact that I know what jokes I'm going to do, and I'm saying it every time, roughly the same time. But I like to show that, you know, it's not my style, but I don't like, I'm not a fan of like the actually pretend like, this happened today. I'm walking down the shops and you know, you're going, and I was like, no, didn't. Probably not ages. But I like to show that it's like when a band plays, it's like, oh, this next track, this next song. It's like this. I've done this loads of times. I used to have an intro where I would say I've done this loads of times.
Yeah.
I don't pretend like they're improvised. And so I like to show the audience that it is there. And I like to bring the list out as well, just to show them that it is, and I've just been on my bits. And I reviewed gave a review because so I kept bringing my list out because I wouldn't see it up there. That's the whole thing. So you didn't get it. But I like to show people like this, this is just an act of thing. You still get the content, but it's more of a stripped away version. So in that respect, it is structured, and I like to keep it a bit loose, just maybe with the sound and the wording and the pace and stuff like that. But the extent where most clients, and it was usually the case, people would just think I was like absolutely wasted on stage.
Yeah.
But since then I don't think that much on stage anymore. It's because people kept saying that he's really drunk, and I was like, I'm not getting booked for it.
Sure.
They're like, we would book for it, he's just unpredictable on stage. But most of the time it was the persona, but sometimes it wasn't. But now, I'd leave the gig recently, I'd go, oh, you just look like you're fucking wasted. I'm totally sober. So that's just because of all the movement or rapping, I don't know.
Sure.
But that's just small
stuff.
And sometimes, I think I did it on the pizza cutter joke. Like, although I'm like, oh, elastic and cartoony, on that pizza cutter, I'll do it every now and then. I've always got on the first joke when I step on stage, and always on a joke, I go, my belly is like totally tense. And I got that comes from, is it going to work? Yeah, it works. But also, when I did theatre at university, one of my acting coaches, he said, you want to give a piece, I can't think of what he called me. But it's a bit of like emotion, like just tense your stomach, little trip, just to tense it. You can feel like it gives a bit of kind of like a fake emotion behind it. I got to do, maybe I tense my stomach, this joke will work, but also because I'm nervous.
Okay.
Basically, every joke I'm tensing my stomach. If you're listening out there, open spots, tense your stomach. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about your origin, about your background. How did you bring yourself to comedy? I've heard that you did some pretty outlandish things before you became a comedian.
Chris Martin cut on me, like Roisin County, they said I'm a man of 1,000 jobs or something.
Yeah.
I had like a lot of strange, odd jobs. Whichever one you want to pick.
Well, what's
the biggest ones are, I was in the army for a bit. I was a very successful drug dealer. I was a beach volleyball coach. I was a professional beach volleyball coach. I did a summer of firefighting. I worked out west chicken cotton. I worked a summer on a cattle ranch.
Were you a boxer?
I was a boxer. State champion boxer, did a pro-am, was supposed to represent Australia for the Australasian Games. I retired from boxing.
You felt you took it as far as you could.
It was my last fight, and unfortunately, I lost. And I can say it was a bit not my fault, because I got there early, and maybe cockily, I thought, no way I'll be on early, because I'm one of the better boxer acts. I'll be probably main bout or maybe penultimate bouts. And I got there and I went, you're on first, you bounce first. And I literally walked in and said, you're on like 10 minutes. And I said, where's my coach and my man here and stuff? And I invited all my friends as well. It was a local one. It was a pro-am. It was a pro-amateur bout. So like, can you want afterwards go like professionals and things like that? Which are pro and amateurs. They said enough here, so I then got my mates to like do warm up and leave like spit guy, mouth guy, and like a guy. I should have had anyone really, but I was like, you be the coach. So then, but then I remember between the battle, you've got to try and get in there more. I said, like, fuck, we're not even the coach. That's really weird. And the fight was against the junior Australian champion, I was on a bit of streaks and thing, I just lost it. He usually let them come to me, but he stood back, I remember. And then I kind of thought, well, I'll pursue, and he said, pick me off, and I lost my points. And that was the last fight. And then I became for all the bouts and fights in that area, I became the ringside announcer and commentator. That was my job. So I gave up boxing and I lost and went into a reporter and news sportscaster. Bit of crossover life with Benny Boot, former state champion. Benny, what are you?
Yeah, I'm here inside.
So, we probably don't have time to go into all of those individual jobs, much as I might. But why do you think it is? How come you have done so many things, so many peculiar sort of jobs?
No, that just came up. I wasn't very good at picking jobs. I got fired from a lot, and some of them were just a shit. And some of them were like just summer jobs, so that's probably why I was looking for some work in the summer. Some were fired, like I worked in a video, got fired. Yeah, I don't know, just Because I think it was because like I was up north, so I was just trying to get a job while I was at university or up north, and then well, I've done that, then I go south and go, well, try and get a job. I was a swimming coach as well for a bit.
Yeah. So were you studying university theatre?
Yeah, I was studying theatre.
Okay. And when do you first remember the impulse to perform? Were you like a funny class clown type kid or?
I think I was funny. I don't remember. I don't know. But they wanted to keep me out in my first 2 years of theatre, and the third year kind of came good, and then you can only do an honours degree if they offer you to come back and do an honours.
Okay.
And I actually came good in the third year, and I said, well, we actually want you to come back now and try to do an honours. And for some reason, I decided to do my honours on stand-up comedy.
Okay.
But I always knew that I kind of wanted to do stand-up. Like,
sure.
But I wanted to be a performer or something. And unfortunately, that performance led me to my stupid theatre course. I didn't like, what a waste. I should be doing like 5 minute spots and on the circuit. 4 years, I would have been much better. and then did my thesis on stand-up, which wasn't, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I thought like Eddie Murphy was the best one.
Okay.
He's not listening to this. He's like that.
Hey, big fan, big friend of the show, there you go.
He's on next week.
So, after you did, you did the last year, the honest thing, as stand-up, and did you start gigging then?
Yeah, as part of the thesis, I did a 30-minute set. Terrible.
As a means of writing less of an essay?
Yeah, I don't know, it was just like...
That was your first set ever, and it was 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was 30 minutes.
Holy hell.
I went all right, but it was just rubbish, and then I got to do real comedy.
Okay.
And yeah, man, I've done 30 minutes, thank you. Not 30 minutes, and then, well, you're going to be doing 5 tonight.
Yeah, right.
And struggle.
Okay. So whereabouts were you? This was in Australia, whereabouts?
Yeah, this is university in Townsville, and then that's where I did my first 30-minute sets, like friends and classmates, lecturers, workers, boxing people, fucking hit that joke. And then when I went back to Queensland, when I after I left uni, I did my first 5.
Okay.
And did that for about a year, and stopped getting into the drug dealing. For 2 years, then nearly got busted, got back in comedy, moved straight away over to here.
Okay.
And eight and a half years later,
Because we started listening in the UK, like you starting the UK corresponded with me starting, we were sort of similar.
I think so, yeah.
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 So,
Mark Manera is,
Yeah, man, the Queen's Head.
A little gig in a pub in Piccadilly above the
Right. So when you started, the stuff that I remember you doing was sort of the same style of stuff as you're doing now. Do you feel your style has evolved from the stuff you originally doing?
A little bit. Like some of the jokes still stick. Some of the jokes are still like, even if that's not arrogant, they're still like almost like some of the best stuff that I've written. You know, like the back of track, like the first joke that maybe I ever wrote.
Right.
I wrote it, and then I was like, oh, that's not going to work, and then I just tried it, it worked, and sold it, of course. There's something that stuck. I found this year, and not so much this year, last year, the jokes I was churning out were a bit all over the place. That's because I was like, under pressure to like write stuff to fill the hour.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, I was kind of like, oh fuck, mate, just let this joke in, mate, you can go and set. Whereas normally, he would be like, you've been demoted.
Yeah.
So I found that that was all blasé and a bit higgledy-piggy, not as concise, not as structured, not as, snappy punchlines. But yeah, this year, I feel like they're back. And some years I find that, and that actually makes sense. Last year, found bits were a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And a bit wordier, which I didn't really enjoy. But this one I found that back to be quite short. And I'm like, actually now I'm like, I need to write a few little longer bits.
Okay.
But.
So which way round are you coming to an hour? Are you writing jokes as a means of expressing yourself? Or are you writing jokes to fill the time that you have to do in order to be a comedian?
The fear to write an hour.
Yeah.
I need to fill that shit.
Yeah, right.
But But yeah, so it's just to fill that hour. But I pretty much already filled it, I think. So now I'm just like trying to write better ones to put it in there.
Sure.
But like I would never. I'm not trying to hide the fact that I'm doing jokes. It'll still be jokes in Edmonds. That's what I love. But it's packaged in a different way. So it's still jokes. People have said you should like do an hour of your life, like boxing and jumping and stuff. I tried to do anecdotal. I tried to tell a story at the, what's that gig at Latitude where storytellers.
Yes, yeah.
I had Sarah Bonetto. I tell a real story.
And you one would think that you had a million real stories.
I was on there, and they just looked at me and just like, really? And I was like, people like to compare things to sliced bread. Fucking go nowhere.
So
it's like, I don't know, but then when I tell stories, you know, like Joel Domer told that story to the Andrew Bird as well. Like I told this story about my Polish builders, and it's a funny story. And Joel said, you're such a good storyteller. I hate it.
Yeah. Do you think that would be, even if that worked, do you think that would be a gear change that would sit sort of uncomfortably next to, because you know the stuff you talk about is when you talk about killing a spider with links,
that's a bit of a yappy yap one, isn't it?
I
think it's a bit of wording to get there, almost too long, but the payoff is good, so I make an exception for him. So you're lucky you get a fucking laugh, link spider. head over the other side of all the other long
ones. But the long ones, because the punchline at the end is so good, and the long, a long build up, I think, is allowed under those circumstances. Because your jokes take place in a kind of an unreal world.
Oh, yeah.
You're not talking about, when you say you invite a load of pizza guys from Domino's over to go to a Pizza Hut and start fighting them, one would assume that you don't actually do that.
No.
It's an idea you've had that you're claiming to do in a sort of cartoon-like world that you're setting up.
Yeah, every bit is like a mini-story.
Yeah.
That's what they are. Some are jokes, but most of them are mini-stories, I think.
Okay.
In this hyper-reality world.
Sure. Well, that's it. Maybe cartoon-like is the wrong word. So it is hyper-real.
Yeah.
So maybe it would sit uncomfortably for you then to tell revelatory actual stuff about your life.
I would. But sometimes there have been glimpses into having truthful jokes, but you always would know.
Okay. Can you give us an example?
No. There are bits that have actually happened, as ridiculous as the jokes are, but it's just like,
you know. What I'm thinking of now isn't one you did tonight, it's the one where you talk about misting up a window and you could stare at a woman.
No.
No, okay.
It was a joke about you being a pervert, a pig, and a rapist.
Well,
yes.
I assume there was some reason why you wouldn't have wanted to say that.
No, that joke came from, I read a tweet about how a guy I like to fog up the window, fog up my bathroom mirror, and then run my hand fingers along it for the four street marks and pretend like I was Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I started thinking, fog, yeah, this kind of fog, and then I took fog and fogging something up. Originally I wrote something like, I don't have an iPad. I just fog up the mirror and write stuff on it or something like that. So, fog joke 0.01 draft.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, ninjas kind of like don't want to be seen. But did I do this?
You didn't do that one tonight, no. But
so the fog joke was, it's like, sometimes the ninjas, back in the old days, ninjas, they're very secretive people. And if they thought someone had seen them, they would just throw a smoke bomb down, and then the smoke would like come up and conceal their identity. And it's a good technique which I've adopted in my everyday life. For example, when I'm perving on a lady through the window, if I think she has seen me, I'll quickly breathe out and fog the window up behind my face. it worked backwards. Ninjas, because you smell it from the window.
Sure.
I'll get all these pieces and I'm trying to construct something.
And let's talk about the environment in which you're doing that. I think you've told me before that you sit in cafes and you sit and go through. Are you a hard writer? Do you work hard? Do you put in hours?
Yeah, I do a lot of writing.
So what's your weekly schedule look like?
I wrote about every second day, maybe.
Okay.
Because once I've written everything, I won't write again until I throw that stuff out.
Okay.
So usually we write that night, do it, which is some good.
Yeah.
It's every week. And so it's like, write day off, write day off. But yeah, just coffee and just sit there, listen to music. Whatever they like to do. Distracting.
Yeah,
that's also fine. I found recently, you put earbuds in the ears, you can't hear anything. It's almost like everything on magnifying. Fog ninja. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's just annoying.
Okay. But it means it's like sensory deprivation.
Music. Upbeat music is like gets your heart rate elevated. So that's like one point.
Okay.
And then you start to read through stuff, old stuff. It's like a snowball. Stuff that you've written, so I just rewrite until I think that's good enough to go in.
Okay.
Something that I may have written like years back. I just go through old books and just keep rewriting. The Needle in a Haystack is old.
Okay.
Old idea.
Yeah.
It's only quite newish, so it ended up being around for like 3 weeks or so.
Okay.
But that was like back in book four.
What book have you got there?
13.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah,
so it's like, he wasn't really in book four, but he was like a long time ago.
Sure.
But yeah, it's rewriting. So it's almost like once you've written some stuff, it just keeps building and just keeps rewriting itself. And then while you're writing those bits, you might go, your brain is also what part of your brain is still working, trying to find new ideas.
Yeah.
And then say, and then I'll finish that quickly, start writing a new premise or idea or observation that I've heard of, or thought of, and then that will be rewriting. So just keep self-perpetuating.
Sure.
And then also just having a lot of like fodder to like breathe through. Like, so I would read through Twitter and just like do other bit of stuff. But it's just, for example, the fog joke,
yeah.
I read that thing, then I was like, oh yeah, so let's play around with the idea of fogs and things.
In
my head, and I played with that, and that's how it came to joke.
Sure.
So it's just like a lot of food for thought sort of thing.
Sure.
Immerse yourself in information. You used to leave the telly on as well, so you might see an advert that you make fun and stuff.
Okay, so you're creating an environment in which...
Yeah, so you go to a coffee shop,
Busy,
tons of bustle, mm-hmm. You're looking around, people, you might hear something that someone says, which you thought is a strange way of saying that, but
sure.
I'll try and turn that into a bit.
Have you ever done any... Did you ever do any training? Did you ever do a course or anything like that in stand-up?
No.
So your system for coming up with that is just something that seemed like a good way to do it and
be
refined over time?
Yeah.
So... So what sort of state are you in, like mentally, when you're doing, do you feel positive about your...
I love it!
Yeah! Do you...
That was out of context. I've been watching all the Cartoon Adventure Time. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, it's a
kids cartoon, but it's not for kids.
Yeah.
And there's one line where the princess goes, I need you to go to this mountain and get this book, and only heroes can do it. And he's like, what? No! But she goes, I love this! I'm in my element! Or something like that. That's why I just, for some reason, decided to say that.
Something I struggle with when I'm writing is a kind of a negative voice that goes, that's never going to work. Do you ever suffer from anything like that, or do you feel positive about your
life? Yeah, sometimes, but this is what I mean, like, I don't know what's funny. It's a messy thing that's going to be funny, they fucking die, and you go, that's me. I thought that was going to be funny.
Yeah.
And then you go, now we're doing some shit stuff.
Yeah.
Idiots have no fucking idea. And then I get a big laugh and I'm like, I didn't know it was going to work.
Yeah, right.
Every comic says that. Like, the bits you think are going to work don't work. The bits you don't think are going to work might work. But yeah, I don't, just at the end I'll express my disappointment when I'm writing. I'm like, shit session! I played FIFA.
But during the session, you kind of.
Come on, my life. Later I found that I'll write for like an hour and a bit, 2 hours, and it's just nothing's coming. And it's only the last 30 minutes that I'll start to bash out like ideas which I've worked for.
Okay.
And then sometimes just from the start, there's no real
At this point, Benny did a complex mind. if you want to see the evidence of these conversations, you have to buy a ticket to this.
My podcast.
There's no consistency.
Nothing's always the same. I find sometimes for maybe weeks or months I might write similar.
Okay.
And then it changes without it, just because I think my body is over it.
Okay. So you're changing up the system.
Yeah, I just get the shit to it because it's just not working. So I then try to, I'll write at home, and then if I start to get it's not working, then I'll change the scenery, go to different coffee clubs. Mix it up, yeah.
So mix it up, earbuds, ten stomach, guitar.
How do these things have comedy pamphlets?
I made a note, but some of these notes are from the last time I saw you when we were in Liverpool. And one of my notes I no longer understand. Do you know what this means?
Let's see if we can figure it out.
How long can you keep the owl impression going?
Oh.
Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah.
I obviously thought it was worth writing down, so tell me what that is.
There have been times I've thought, just because you're bored, I wonder how long I can do this owl. I literally just go, woo. The first thing was, this is stupid. And then it's not that thing where they laugh because it's just, and I kept doing it. And then I added a little bit in there, like after I've done it for like maybe a minute. And then I just casually look at my watch. And then I keep going with it. But I can usually feel when they always say, fuck off. long. But I think it is, I never like gone too long.
Sure.
It can't get going longer though.
Given the nature of stuff like that, some of your stuff, which is risky, like you said, there's a long setup and then a payoff. Do you get nervous on stage about whether or not something's going to work? Does that actually, obviously there is an element of risk as to whether it won't, but do you actually have like an emotional response to that? Do you think, oh fuck, I hope this works? Or are you actually as relaxed and sort of languid as you appear to be?
Yeah. I do. Because you can usually tell sometimes when an audience is more savvier than others.
Sure.
Every comic's got little bits that gives them an idea, like these guys. Like whether it takes how long to laugh at a joke or.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I feel like, oh, fuck, I probably shouldn't do this joke. And then, and then it might even take them like a beat for it to laugh. You go, oh, fuck. But sometimes you just come to go, this isn't always going to work.
Yeah.
But those are the days when you just feel comfortable and the audience are beautiful. But it rarely happens where you're so comfortable on stage. I think Jerry talks, Jerry Seinfeld talks about a documentary called Comedian. Have you seen it? It's about Jerry and not doing any of his old jokes ever again. Does it for one more time. And that's the last name of his CD that he brought out. He said, tell me the last time. And then immediately goes into this documentary about him trying to write 2 hours of material and shows you 5, 10, 15. He talks about it as well, about never ever fully comfortable on stage, and then you do find that it's beautiful. It's like that sweet spot being in the zone, and it's just like you could do anything, it's crazy. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I think it's referred to as flow, in a sort of arty kind of way. When you get in a state of, this is just working out, so you just go to something.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often, not very often at all. I hope what you can. Sometimes, really, where it's just been the super sweet spot where it's just like, and sometimes that particularly is so comfortable, the gig's not even going that well, but you just feel fucking comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're just handling this dying, it's amazing. It actually has been usually when I'm not doing well. I would love to have one when I'm killing it. That'd be awesome.
Uh, I don't know how long we've done, but I feel like we've done a little while. I'd like to throw it to the floor if anyone's got any questions. If you ask me, and then I'll repeat the question into the thing. Do you feel like, do you worry about putting material on Twitter, or do you want to save it?
All shit just goes on Twitter, but there's only one interesting question that I realised. There have been one or two jokes where, and this is where the time I go, this is funny. So I feel like I don't need to put it on Twitter. Well, I think it's a very good observation. I'm scared someone might do it in that time span before I get to do it on stage and I've lost the rights to it or something. But yeah, all shit goes on Twitter. To the point where I think I tweet too much sometimes. Fuck, I lose followers. After about 3 hours of tweeting, you just see my followers and I'm like, fuck off, dude. It doesn't even make sense. But sometimes it's just my test ground. I don't know. Who is this? Yeah, someone said you were funny. I went on Twitter, not one thing you have read has been funny. I was like, oh, sorry, I'll try harder. Yeah, everything goes on Twitter. But then every now and then, they might be just one go, that is fucking dumb. Escaping the gold puppets.
Okay. How many incarnations of your stage persona have you gone through to get to the one that you have left?
At the beginning, literally within the first 6 months, it was like, it fucked it. It was all over that, all over the place. But I think what you see now has been pretty much standard for 9 years, 8 years, I reckon. Maybe it's played, because I used to drink a lot when I went on stage, only because I was nervous, but it was very hit and missy. I mean, like someone like Tony Ball, back in his day, very hit and miss, but now he's finally learned how to, not learned, but he's just, he's just found it now.
Yeah.
But he's a lot more, that's what I think. I mean, comedy is about consistency as well. Like, anyone can go and have a fucking awesome gig, but can you do it the next night, next night? You know, so I never had much consistency, but I would be really good, or literally really shit. So in those days when I was drunk, I quite liked the style when I was drunk. It was really fucking loose.
Yeah.
It was really fun, but didn't get booked for gigs fast.
Sure.
And I think that's almost like muscle memory now, like drinking a lot on stage, that kind of, especially I've listened to a lot of it back and I've almost like how I was when I was drunk. Almost. So that's probably why.
That's dangerous advice. Like you're doing your persona is doing an impression of yourself drunk.
Almost.
Okay.
It's just, I don't know, just stuff came out of it.
Sure.
And then sort of when I stopped drinking, I found there was a little bit more punchier and stuff like that. And then I don't know, it changed a little bit. But yeah.
Do you see a big difference in the you on stage and the you off stage?
Oh yeah.
Because you said, the reason I mentioned it is you sort of alluded to that earlier on.
Yeah.
And you seem quite similar to me, or not?
Oh, really?
Is that just because I know you're reasonable? Is that a reasonable observation?
But I'm on stage now, really, sort of, aren't I?
But equally when you walked in here earlier on today. Okay.
I don't know, maybe.
Would you call that a dog's start to progress? That's fine. Any other questions? I've got a few other things that I'd like to ask. Do you judge by the number of retweets something gets on Twitter how good it is?
Generally I'll probably do it on stage anyway. But it's more, it's almost like, I'm going, gosh, tell me how it ends, how millions. But it's kind of like I almost want to know before I try it on stage.
Yeah.
But then if I have like two, that sounds arrogant, but if I have too many jokes, then I kind of go, well, I can't take you, you can get stars or retweets, I'm going to say this guy.
Say that again, I don't quite understand what you're saying.
So if I have too many jokes, I'll usually take one to got a bit more interest on Twitter.
Gotcha, okay.
And then once it's in, I go, I have to go with 18 today. So I think, it's not an accurate gauge at all. I mean, Adam Bloom went on and he doesn't believe it's an accurate gauge, but he got sort of old rope one day and he literally just read his Twitter feed out and some of the bits were fucking amazing, but he just didn't think it was going to work.
Right.
So it must be sort of an accurate gauge. He just went through.
Sure.
Some of that, like, the cremated popcorn came off Twitter. I'll add a joke from two bases on Twitter, although I didn't get that many retweets, but like,
That's one of my favourite jokes of yours.
Yeah, most of it will come out, off Twitter. I think you'd have to get an idea, but yeah, but it's not always accurate.
Do you choose a particular time of day to tweet?
Mornings, for two reasons. It's fresh, where you just sort of after loving your boys and pipe. Also, if I drink coffee too late, I won't sleep. And I kind of tailor. I have a lot of American followers, and that's when their night to day afternoon is.
Okay.
So I'm looking for their response as well.
Sure.
To them. So I'm also working with American time, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But usually it's just because I want to be awake if I have coffee too late. That's the main reason.
Are you an awareness of the particular things you're good at as a stand-up comic? And are there things that you find intangible? Are there things you wish you were better at that you don't feel you've got your head around? Are there sort of things you see other people do that you go, I wish I could get that in the same sort of way?
I'm really technique or anything like that. Obviously jokes. Sometimes I see a really good joke. There's no one that... Yeah, nothing like... I always think that I would like to do accents, but I would never do that on stage. But that's always a good tool to have if you can do good accents. Maybe sometimes I feel like I wish I could do a bit more of that. But then I go, a bit more physicality. How do you say that word? Oh, that's an easy word as well. Physicality.
Yeah.
Good work, lips. Yeah, you know, people like do that proper act out scenes and stuff. Like,
yeah.
They play all the different characters. And I do, I quite like words that are really good. Oh man, I do that. But then when I get out there, I go, that's
sure.
Yeah.
And it, conversely, are there things that you see other comics do that you that make you roll your eyes and you just go, what do you hate about comedy?
Those are questions, Stu.
Yeah, go on.
Not a fan, or I mean, I'm not a real fan of Mature Girl. but I do like Nina Conti, because she doesn't use the doll to insult the audience, she uses it as a character which she plays with.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Whereas usually it's the Mature Girl using the doll as the trick.
An in-depth question there, which I think I'm going to condense thus. You just said a moment ago, and this is condensing it, but when you just said there, for example, nice one, you stumbled over the word, then you said, oh, well done, lips, when you correctly said it. Is that something you said before? And the question, as a wider thing, I think, is your fail-safe, your safety net sort of jokes, do they come from improvisation when things don't work and you have to save it? And then refine them over time, or are they safety net jokes that you've written ahead of time?
Half and half. Some of them came out from improvisations. The Death Come 4 came out. I wrote the idea that I thought it was funny that I would have two jokes, and that idea kind of worked. And then at the very last moment, I always do it after a new joke. If the new joke works, that's great, and I can just carry on. It's almost like a step. If one new joke works, it's great, then I go to the next stage of another new joke. As soon as the new joke fails, then I have to stop doing new jokes. And then I pull out this bit of my paper. So this is a list of my jokes. Now at the bottom here, I've got two jokes written at the bottom, little asterisks written next to them, and these are my DEFCON 4 jokes. So if shit's going sour, I fucking bust out DEFCON 4 and save the day. You'd be surprised how often I use them. I've already used them. I just wrote that as my safety net, my DEFCON 4 jokes. And it was only that last bit that I said, you'd be surprised how much I use them, which got a laugh. And then I just said, I've already used them. Just like, that was improvised. And then that just works. And then I've never said the lips one, that's just because I'm conscious about my lips and my lips. always fucking words up, so thanks James.
And the last question I wanted to ask you was about your influences. I remember a conversation with you a while ago, we were talking about Mitch Hedberg. And you say he's a big influence on you, and you, I think you have a similar style of almost like personality driven one liners.
Yeah.
And he, I think at the time
he was, he was like, so this is how I go, this the back of the truck joke.
Yeah.
Which he told. So I've written this joke, which is very, very set up punchline. Arguably probably like I've almost said a perfectly written joke. And then I went back when I first started, I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, so I was listening, I wanted to do political or fucking frock comedy.
Ventriloquism.
Or, I didn't do ventriloquism. So we did a gig in Canberra, we were driving back, and a mate of mine, Max O'Kine. He said, let's act on, we put on a Headbreak CD. And then as soon as I heard one of his jokes, I thought, I've got a joke like that.
Yeah.
My truck joke. So then I tried it, and it worked. And then I just sort of listened to more, and then definitely his style influenced mine. I think you say you're very, very much Hedberg-esque.
Yeah.
But I think I've recently started to be a little bit more on my own. Mostly it's kind of my own style, almost like, say, Banks.
Sure.
You know, they sort of influenced by the type of bands and things like that. But he was really definitely my favorite comedian. So I died. And also, he came to Stephen Knight.
Yeah.
Did meet Martin. That's really. Yeah, probably. Hedberg, Wright, Martin, and all
that. Okay.
Stephen's brought out of UCD, which is just fucking awesome.
I still have a buddy.
Yeah, they're really good. Really, really good. And so when I heard these jokes, I thought, you know that.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, fun story and go, blah, blah.
Okay.
It's not working. And then when I heard that, I wrote that joke and I kept them very, very, very short and very fast paced over the internet.
Sure.
That was his first CD and he said it was really, really fast paced. Yeah, okay. And he said the man always needed to bang. And then I just kept going. Yeah. And then the alcohol sort of influenced me. And he was very loose as well.
Definitely.
He's a big drugger. He's had a camper van that he would take. As long as he didn't like flying, he would just be able to take his drugs with him. And he was often just out of his head on. But maybe I was sort of like finding him, maybe I was quite like that.
Sure.
At least the style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, I feel we should just say something about the future. What do you want out of comedy long term? I mean, this is your third hour now, Edinburgh, your fourth?
Will be my third hour, yeah. Third.
Okay. And do you see yourself fitting into the comedy firmament in Britain? Do you see yourself doing panel shows? Have you done any panel shows?
I don't know if I'll be good on panel shows. If it improvise, do it.
Okay.
I don't think that I would work well on a panel show.
So what do you see as your...
I've always set little goals. My first goal in comedy was to quit and go full-time, which I did like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Pretty scary, but it's paid off now. The next ones I've got, I would like to go to Montreal or do Kilkenny, little sub goals.
Sure.
And then the one after that, you know, a special or something like that. But that's ages away. But no, I've set little goals. The first one I'll go full time, but it's done. Next time I want to try do Montreal, get invited. I don't want to do Montreal, I want to get invited to Montreal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or get invited to do Kilkenny. I was always impressed with those when I was a kid.
Yeah, sure.
So that's sort of like a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe I'm 11. I'm there, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, right.
He's starting to age, but it might be Louis C.K. Is that just off the show or is that real?
What's that?
Isn't Louis C.K. going to be 11? Is that what I've heard talk about?
I haven't heard that really.
Or maybe it's like the thing in one of his shows and he's like talks to, he's like, I'm not going to be Louis C.K. And then apparently Chris Rock has been told the same thing. And But I don't know if there's truth behind that or not.
Sure.
Might be.
Okay.
Ooh, Luna.
So,
I'm up for it.
Oh, yeah. Very good. New letter.
I don't know.
Yeah, and why not?
Yeah.
You, you see, it's a trope of this podcast that I try and find out whether or not people are happy, and if they are happy, try and convince them that they're not. But you seem really happy. You seem like you've nailed it. You seem like you've tried every job under the sun.
Are you fucking that out, do you? You got me ready.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy. Like, when I'm full time, I'm happy. So depressed. Just because I didn't have money, I was stealing food. I walked 21 miles for a gig once.
Yeah.
To get paid. But yeah, now I am. You won't change me. I'm happy.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
That's the end. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. So
thank you so much to Benny, thanks to my assistant producer Sarah Grun, and apologies to both of them for all of these sound issues. As I said, all my fault, and we will make sure that this never ever happens again. Remember, it's Brendan Burns on the 3rd of August and Greg Proops on the 5th. You can get your tickets from gildedballoon.co.uk. Search Goldsmith in the little search box, or you can follow the link on comedianscomedian.com. You can tweet me at comcompod. Email me at info@comedianscomedian.com. That's enough web stuff. Thank you to Dan Melrose. Thanks to Graham Crockford. I'm knackered. I'm going to bed. I'll speak to you next Wednesday.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.